Hello, guys. This is Clint Locklear from Trapping Radio. I am up in Springfield, Missouri. We have a guest to talk about what I think y'all find interesting today. And we're going to be talking about predator control and probably some of the roughest ground that I've ever seen going down the interstate. So we're going to talk about that. Before we get into today's show, though, I want to thank our sponsors. We got some of the best sponsors that are trap supply guys. We got F&T out of Alpena, Funky Trap Tags and Supplies out of Iowa, Wildlife Control Supplies out of Connecticut, Oki Cable and Trap, which is out of Oklahoma, and Dunlap Lures, which is a good friend of mine, Jeff Dunlap. He's got Dunlap Lures, most of y'all know that, as Hellfire and Soul Taker and all those really cool names he comes up with. So if you're at the NTA or you're gonna be at one of the shows, make sure you stop by and talk to some of the sponsors and tell them that you appreciate it. We are gonna have some background noise because we are at the NTA, so we're just gonna have to deal with that. But why don't you go and introduce yourself and we'll go and get started.
I'm Stephen Bridges and I'm from Goldthwaite, Texas, a little town right in the center of Texas, in Mills County, a county about just under 750 square miles with about 4,900 people and 50,000 goats.
You know, I could make some jokes about that, but I'm not going to. So we were talking yesterday, and you trap pretty much full-time, correct,
buddy? Pretty much, yeah, at our ranch and then several others around.
Now, is that how you make your living, or is it a supplemental
thing? No, I was born and raised there in Goldthwaite, and then I moved off, went to college, and lived in Chicago for several years, then moved back.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I know, well. It's a long story, but got back home as soon as I could, married my fourth grade sweetheart and decided I was going to, you know, make a living there.
Fourth grade?
Fourth grade sweetheart, man. It's never too late. It's never too late to rekindle a romance. So,
fourth grade.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Only in a small town.
Did y'all keep the little letters?
Yeah.
Like me, yes and no?
Yes and no with the boxes.
Yeah.
Well, funny story about that. My dad owned the newspaper, and he got me a ride on the fire truck going to the rodeo. We had a parade, and we were sitting at the top of this old-timey fire truck. I got her a ride there, and we held hands, which was a big step, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the rodeo later, we were in the gate where they let the horses in and out. All the boys were sitting up there, and she came up and poked me in the rear end and said, "Your hands are sweaty. We're broke up." So that was her.
That was, you're in Texas. Everything,
yeah,
is sweaty.
That's what I said. I was nervous. It's hot. You know, what are you going to do? But it took me about 25 years to get her back. But she finally wised up and married me.
Did you have to prove to her you didn't really have sweaty hands all the time?
Exactly. But we grew up best friends, hunted and fished together all our lives. She dated one of my best friends, so I didn't date her in high school. That's kind of what happened there. And so, who I wasn't related to before I got married, because she was born and raised there too. I am now.
So you're related,
basically,
to everybody now.
We're all related. Although that's changing, there's more people moving in all the time. The complexion of the county is changing some. The ranches are getting smaller, and it's getting a little, you know, tougher in that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they used to be big sprawling ranches, and now they get smaller and smaller as the big ranchers pass away and their kids sell them off and do stuff. It definitely has changed that complexion of it, but it's still the same rural county that it was I grew up in for the most part. I mean, it's very ag based. I mean, our single largest income stream, because to go back to the story of how I got back home, I had cancer when I was 12, then I got cancer again when I was 29 when I was in Chicago. So I moved back to get on my parents' insurance at the newspaper, and then after I did all those treatments for a couple years, then I took the paper over from my parents when I fell in love with Deborah, and then back in love, or she fell back in love with me. You know, it's always an argument.
Mm-hmm.
And then
you won't win it.
No, I won't win it. And so I took the paper over from my parents, and then I'm a director at the bank there, MC Bank, and use my finance degree, which is what I went to school to do. So that's good. And then ranch, we have family ranch outside of town. And so, you know, you don't get one job in a little town. You got to make several, piece them together, make a
right,
living.
Right.
So, and then the reason I got into the trapping side is I trapped coons when I was a kid when they were worth some money back in the 80s with live traps. I had live traps in all the culverts in the county, you know, and so I remembered that, but didn't think again about it for forever. I was a hunting and fishing and fly fishing and all that stuff. And then I got back into the trapping because we have two county trappers that are full-time. They trap every day of the year. One is a USDA trapper and the other is a county-funded trapper. We have a rodeo and a dance that funds the trapper. And
that's cool.
Yeah, that's kind of how we do it.
So it's not based off of sheep or goat tax like Montana.
That's right. No, we don't. It's volunteer. Those guys are volunteer. They get some help from the county. And, you know, it was a big brouhaha a few years ago. They dropped the funding from the county and now trying to get it back, et cetera, et cetera. But we basically privately fund a separate trapper, and they're trapping all the time, basically snaring. That's pretty much
what trapping means in Texas.
That's what trapping means in Texas. These are PhD coyotes. So anyway, we lost our trapper. He went to another county, and in just a month, we lost $10,000 worth of baby sheep. You know, they just started hitting us. So I went, you know, I said, well, I guess I'm elected, you know, mm-hmm. from the family. And so I went down to the hardware store and bought a dozen snares and thought, this ought to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, now it's nothing for me to make a couple hundred snares in a weekend to go out and, you know, when I'm low and set them. I mean, they're all over. I stick them in every hole I can find. And so now I make all my own stuff. I trap a lot. Whenever I see movement or sign or evidence or somebody gets a lamb killed, then I'm all over it around me, because it's these cows, they don't sit still. They travel. Mm-hmm. You know, this time of year, not so much. You're going to get the moms and the pups in the summer. The moms will stay real close to home, and you got to be real close on them to get them.
Right.
And so the rest of the time I'm catching them, you know, all the time, you know, off and on.
So you said I'm in the middle of Texas.
Yes.
Well, if you've never driven through Texas, it's damn near a country of its own. I was like, well, what do you consider in the middle of Texas?
Yeah.
And when you describe that to me, I remember when me and a friend were going out to New Mexico. This is what I told you. We're coming through. You go through East Texas coming from the east. Then it kind of looks cowboyish. And then when you're talking about, the only way I can describe that, I thought it looked catty, but it's hellish.
Yeah.
It's caliche, which is that, there looks like the only soil you're going to find is maybe at the bottom of a culvert where right. a little bit got ran out. And and I remember going down the road, and we stopped four or five different times, and I went out, and I remember, because it was so different from anything I've ever seen, it was like concrete.
Yeah.
It looked like, for me knowing now, like cat claw and crap, stuff like that, yeah. growing out of it, and that was it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's white, mm-hmm. so it reflects heat.
Yeah. Yeah, it's white.
Mean, it's nasty looking.
It's just like cement, and it's different hardnesses of it. I mean, it's not all the same, but if you find the little black dirt, I mean, we call that, you know, farmland. If you've got 3 inches of black dirt on top of something, that's farmland. You plant that. it's tough. It makes trapping tough. It makes driving T-posts to build fence tough. It's hard on everything.
It doesn't, from memory, I mean, of course, what I've learned in Texas is 1 year a place can look like Mars, and the next year it can look like Kansas.
Yes.
So does it ever green up?
Oh, yeah. Right now we've had a really wet spring. When it rains in Mills County, it is the most beautiful place you've ever seen. Mm. When it doesn't rain, it looks like the moon, with some weak old trees that just sort of hang out. It's amazing how much feast or famine that is. And so it really is just rain dependent, totally. And that's the same thing with our quail and our turkeys and our deer. We're rain dependent, you know. Same thing with our animals. If it doesn't rain for 2 or 3 years, everybody's got to sell everything. Right. Or nothing to eat. So we sell that livestock and start back over next time it rains. I mean, we at our ranch, we understock our livestock. We have a good combination of wildlife and livestock. So we have sheep, we have goats, or hair sheep. They're Dorper sheep. They're, you know, meat sheep. They don't have any wool value. And then we have Spanish goats, black Spanish goats, and we have cows. And we kind of keep them underneath the radar so that they don't ever eat us out of house and home. Mm-hmm. So we always have extra left over for the deer and the quail, the turkeys and the doves. And I plant, I'm like Johnny Appleseed, I plant in food plots all the time.
You know, your 3 inches of black dirt?
In my 3 inches of black, and it's like, bang, just plowing that stuff with a plow. It's like, you get out and you feel like, you know, feel like you've been in one of those old tumblers, like a fur tumbler or something.
So your quail, there's enough cover for them, you think, naturally? Mm-hmm. So they used to be there originally.
Yeah. There's something systemic with the quail population. I've gone round and around with the biologists, and there's the eyeworm, and there's the other parasites they found. There's the ants and the fire ants, and then there's the hawks and owls and stuff that get them. Everything eats a quail. It's right. Like the perfect meal.
It's like the wild chicken.
It's exactly right, the wild chicken of the West. And so it's really tough. Plus, we've got all these nest predators. With fur prices at basically zero there, you've got your possums, your skunks, your coons. Everything wrecks a nest. Everything eats the babies. Everything eats the adults. It's really tough, you know. And so I try to protect them best I can. You know, I wouldn't shoot a wild quail for all the tea in China right now because we finally got a few. Mm-hmm. And so we're hoping for the best, but it's tough all over America. You know, it's tough.
Are y'all, is it kind of like a county thing or a bunch of ranchers trying to bring back quail, or is it for just an industry or just mean, for
yeah, all right,
fun?
So here's the deal. In the 70s, like 1977, I was 8 years old, and CPS would probably take a parent away for doing this, but when I was 7 or 8 years old, my dad would pick me up from elementary, drop me in the deer stand with a rifle, and come back and get me after dark every day. That was what I did. And I shot 3 deer, and that was every deer I saw. I shot everything I saw. And now it's nothing to go out and you know, see 50 deer during a day of, you know, deer hunting. I mean, we have places, we're in a managed land deer permit system ranch where we have to take our does, we have to take the excess deer off of there.
Is it kind of like a QDMA based?
Exactly,
system?
It's just like that, except it's the state version. Okay. And so we manage our own land, they trust us, they send us the tags based on surveys we do. And so it's gone down and down, so we have about 2,700 acres. The first year they said you need to kill 80 does. Well, that's a chore, you know, and then it went down to 60 and 50 and 40. Now we're in the 25-30 range, you know, one every 100 acres to just keep it in stasis, you know. And so anyway, it's the management is much more intensive than it used to be when these old ranchers just ran every piece of livestock they could run to make money. Now it's much more a combination of the livestock and the wildlife.
Is there a lot of the, just for income from the farmers, or ranchers, I guess you call them there, do they lease the for deer hunters, so that's part of their income now?
Yeah, so for example, I run I own the little newspaper there. We have about, you know, 2,500 subscriptions a week go out to all the little, you know, plus we're multimedia like everybody else, online and everything, but all told together, the news dissemination is about 2,500, which is every household. We're like 96% penetration rate there. It's a little monopoly, the Goldthwait Eagle. You know what, when Google shows up to cover a city council meeting, then I'll consider that competition. But for now, nobody else cares but our people.
Right.
So we can, little papers are doing fine. So anyway, we have about 4,900 people in the whole county. And on opening day of deer season, there's 50,000 people in our county.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. We have the Texas Parks and Wildlife did a big TV show about Goldthwait and the influx of people that come to deer hunt there. And so from a rancher's perspective, they make just as much money free and clear from the deer hunters that they don't have to do anything for. Mm-hmm. That they make on the cattle and the sheep and the goats that they bust their tail doing, and they might lose 5 years in a row money on, you know, right, depending on the fluctuations of the market. So it has changed it's changed the economics of our entire county. Every year when the deer hunters show up, the farmer gets a new truck. I mean, it just happens.
Mm-hmm.
So you take that, you know, for what it is. It's great for us. We love it. So we have some high fence places. Most of the vast majority is low fence. And the vast majority are still ranches, working ranches. But now we have a lot that are just wildlife ranches. Even low fence, they can get their agriculture tax break with wildlife. So a lot of guys from the city that just want a deer hunt, they don't put sheep and goats on them, they put deer on them.
Mm-hmm.
But they want to save those deer just as much as we want to save our.
Right.
Because a coyote coming eating a fawn, it doesn't care if it's a buck or a doe.
Right.
We want to manage them. We want to shoot the does, excess does, to have that 1-to-1 buck ratio, which makes everything better. You see the bucks, the rattling works. You know, back when we were, you know, 15 does to every buck in the county, you could rattle, no buck cared. He was tired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had all the females he wanted. Well, at our ranch now, rattling works like a charm, because they're all, the best bucks breed the does. Because there's a doe will come by and heat, and there'll be 5 bucks behind it at our ranch. You know, we'll see, you know, our bucks come to the deer feeders, and our does are scared because they get shot.
Because
mm-hmm. They're tough to get. We have a lot of the brush that's thick. We have brush and open land. And so the geography is, it's either super thick or super open. So those deer, they live in that brush until they've got to come out to do something, which is chase a female, go to a deer feeder, whatever.
Well, that's what I remember when I first started dealing with, because I've never really targeted goat sheep ranchers,
yeah,
just because they're tight.
And yeah.
I'm a business guy, so I go where there's money.
Yes.
And I was really hammering the deer stuff. It was interesting to me because you could show the deer guys study after study after study, a lot of them done in Texas.
Yeah.
About 70% of all fawns are going to get 8. Y'all got crazy genetics down here to a point, even naturally.
Yeah.
So if you're losing 70% of your genetic pool every year and you don't get to pick what you cull, what are you missing out as far as revenue goes? And it was hard. Eventually that sunk in, but, you know, because at first they didn't want to believe 70% were getting eat, and you keep showing them study. And, you know, and the more I showed them from Texas, because they didn't care about anywhere else, because
right,
that's Texas. And then I kept showing them all in from Texas A&M and stuff. And then it kind of started registering. You need to be able to cull if you're going to call yourself a manager. And that's when things started changing, when they realized, yeah, maybe only 3 of those bucks that the baby bucks are eating are the ones that's going to make us famous.
That's exactly right. And those, the deer genetics is somewhat getting out in Mills County. In other words, some of those high fence genetics are making it out.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing some deer. We had a 188 Boone and Crockett buck killed on 150 acres just a few years ago. So those, some of those genetics, and that we didn't get that before. Most
right.
of our bucks top out about 155, 160 on natural genetics. They're, man, we shoot a lot of them. I mean, these guys are pretty serious. If you let them get old enough, even our natural bucks get pretty big. They don't have the size of these, you know, Midwest deer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a big whitetail Mills County would be 125 pounds field dressed, you know, but they have big antlers. The deer guys were on all this first, and they're the ones who started the flying, the helicopter shooting and all that. So, you know, not only do we have the 2 full-time trappers, we've got a handful of guys like me who trap for my ranch and anybody around me who wants me, you know, who needs me. And then we fly helicopters. The Predator Association that we have there flies helicopters every year to try to take them down, the coyotes and the hogs too. And so these coyotes, they're chased nonstop, you know. It's amazing.
Well, when the first year that I went to Texas, I was trying to figure out where to tag.
Yeah.
And I was, where was that first year? That was down in George West. So when I got looking online, the closest thing I could see with a tagging office was Abilene.
Yeah.
Which is a long freaking way from George West.
Yeah.
But I remember driving up there, they knew I was coming. And Abilene looked more agricultural to me
yeah.
than what I was at in South Texas. And the game boar is super nice. And we pulled him out of the freezer, and we're just talking and this, that, and the other. And I just asked him, I said, y'all have a lot of bobcats up there? And he goes, not that many. I said, what about coyote problems? And I'll never forget it, because he's looking at me and he goes, oh no, shh, dude, do not say that out loud. And I'm like, what? He goes, just because you said coyote in problem, there was two helicopters that just started up at $400 an hour that are looking for what you may not have seen.
Yeah.
And I was like, you got to be kidding me. He goes, no, we don't have coyotes. And I'm like, there's no way. He goes, when there's a coyote, it's a county effort to go find them and kill them. And I remember just being dumbfounded that was that way in Texas.
Yeah. It's a big problem. And then, I mean, it's a recreation too. We have one, you know, a huge calling contest in February. Everybody's trying to get them in February, and you know, because that's when a lot of our lambs happen, our baby goats happen in the spring there, and then you're trying to protect the fawns. So they do that. Well, you know, you send a couple hundred guys out with calling. I mean, you can't call a coyote at that point. I mean, I called a lot before I started trapping, and they just bark at you, and you know, you call maybe one out of 100 sittings, you'll call a coyote up. You'll call gray foxes every day.
See, people won't believe that because they think Texas, they watch that on TV.
They see the videos from South Texas, and yeah, you can call them up down there even during the day, but not where we are, not in Mills County. They're just harassed. They are the most paranoid of the most paranoid. Is what we have. Yeah.
So I can't imagine that, because I thought what I was dealing with in South Texas was some of the most paranoid.
Yeah.
Because someone's trying to kill them every day, and it's usually someone with two legs.
Yeah.
And I mean, they were super cautious, but I can't imagine the phobia they probably have of everything where you're at.
Every rancher with a feed truck on the dash of his pickup has got a rifle. And this Texas, you know, there's a soft case up there with the rifle on it, and it's loaded, and one in the chamber. And they're ready to stick it out the window and shoot whatever, you know, coyote that runs away from them.
Mm-hmm.
And once that coyote starts running, they're going to get shot at here, here, and here, unless it gets in a hole.
Right.
I mean, they're scared. And rightfully so, from their perspective, they're scared, but it makes it tough to be a trapper.
Right.
You know, I picked a tough place to start trapping.
I bet you have a master's degree in it.
Well, I don't. I'm still learning. That's why I'm here, you know, at these, you know, NTA and the different stuff, as I'm always learning. It's a fun game. It's become my hunting and all that. It's what I do now, and it's fun. It's a fun game. When, you know, you hear a lot about the fur trappers, they put up, you know, hundreds of coyotes and all these coons and everything. But, you know, have them come down and play with our coyotes a little bit.
See, that was getting ready to say, if you've got any mean streak in you whatsoever, you ought to start a coyote competition with a money prize like they used to do out in New Mexico, and just see who's got the gumption to come to a place like that. Because no one will believe you there's no coyotes.
Yeah.
And everybody will be bragging, and everybody will get down there, and it's footholds only.
Yeah.
And that just watch people's egos shatter like glass.
Yeah. Well, I'll catch, you know, on our place, 35 from 35 to 50 cows, depending on the year, you know.
And how big is that?
It's about 2,700 acres. And they're moving through, you know, they're not all residents. They're coming through. But of that, 5 or 6 in footholds, you know. Sometimes more, sometimes less. It just depends.
Is that because you don't put the effort, or it's just easier because of the fence?
One, all right, so good fences make good trapping in Texas. Our exterior fences are all pretty good. In the old days, we'd run 6 strands of barbed wire at the bottom, all about an inch apart, so they had to make a slide. Now we have better, the high-tension fences have smaller holes at the bottom, and they got to make a slide to get under them. Well, they make a slide, they get a snare. I mean, it doesn't matter if any hole bigger than 4 inches under the fence, I'm putting a snare in. And so when it comes down to the footholds, it's more of a specialized, it's not efficient to put footholds out all the time. I wait till I find some sign that's really good sign, and not just a turd in the road, because that may have been planted by a coyote that ran 45 miles.
Because
some coyotes live on your place. They leave to hunt every night, and they come back. I see where they come and go, and once I find where they come and go, it's a lot easier to hang that snare.
Right.
All right. It's the best blind set, you know, basically you could make. So then it's the ones that are local that I know are killing my sheep and goats that I go for with the foot traps. They're the ones that hop the fence, climb the fence, go through the gates.
Now, is your place high fence?
No, low fence. All low fence.
So when you're saying high tensile, is it just like a mini high fence?
A new type of fence it's real stout. And it's Stay Tight is, I think, the name of it. But anyway, it's a high tensile. You had to have special pliers, like cable cutting pliers, kind of to cut it so stout. And you stretch it real tight, and it doesn't have near the play in it that other fence has. And it's got small. Well, you can buy different kinds, but ours has, it's for sheep and goats. But it's got like little, 3 or 4 inch holes at the bottom, and then they get bigger as they get to the top.
Kind of like the hog panel.
Kind of like a hog panel, exactly like a hog panel, except, you know, lighter wire. But it's woven in there real tight, and it's taken the place of having to run all that barbed wire on the bottom of our fences, you know, because it's made specifically for that predator control.
That's pretty sweet for snaring. So yeah. When you were a kid, how did you get started? Was there someone that you just do it on your own? Did someone help you? Or,
well, back then, this is the 80s, we could drive around at night with 4 or 5 kids in a pickup with 22s and shoot jackrabbits and cottontails out of the fields, and we could get $1 for a jackrabbit and 50 cents for a cottontail on the stump. And if we killed a coon, it was like $25, and that's when gas was 75 cents a gallon.
Well, who was paying you for the rabbits?
We had a local guy. And he would sell it to the dog food people and the dog racing people down in Fredericksburg.
Really?
Yeah. So we could go make money doing that stuff as kids, just jacking around. And that turned into coon hunting, which were more expensive, but there wasn't near as many of them back then. And then whatever else we came across, which was very rare, like ringtails and other stuff like that. And he would buy everything on the stump. We didn't have to skin it. We stay up night, drive around in the back of a pickup with spotlights and shoot stuff and give it to him, and he paid us, and it was amazing.
So let me guess, most of the beer in high school was paid for by jackrabbits and cottontails.
Yeah, lots of that kind of stuff we won't admit to all the time, but yeah, a lot of that kind of stuff happened. It was a good time. It's like, you know, nobody would pay you to go deer hunting, but boy, they'd pay you to go rabbit hunting, you know. Mm-hmm. And the old ranchers were like, well, shoot them, because they're eating, you know, every 10 rabbits is a goat, you know, or whatever, you know, whatever ratio they thought at the time. And so that turned into putting the live traps out and checking it after football practice, that kind of stuff. And with my brother Stuart used to do it too some. And we'd sell them on the stump. We never skinned a thing. Didn't even think about it. And now, you know, it's kind of sad that fur's just not worth a whole lot where we are.
Right.
If you want to get a dollar for a coon skin, you got to staple a dollar bill to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know.
So you don't have those really big coon like when I see down in South.
Every Texas. Once in a while, you get the big ones. In January, February, when they're running, I catch those big, big fat ones. And I might try to work a few of those this year and see what they bring. You know, I haven't done it, so.
Well, there's been years down there that I've snuck those into northern states just because of the size.
Yeah.
You know, average is 3X down there because of high protein feed.
Yep.
And there have been a couple of states, which I won't mention because I don't want to get anybody upset, but we got the highest pump money for green coon than anybody else there at a state that they would have made fun of anything south
from
of
Texas.
Yeah, I mean, if you would have mentioned Texas, they would have just went, oh, I'll give you a quarter.
Yeah.
But when they didn't know it was from Texas, it was like, I think it was for green 1 year, it was $21
wow.
a piece.
Well, that makes it worth it.
Yeah, and everybody else in the northern state that, or, you know, and it's a good coon state, they were doing like 18.
Well, I'll give it a shot this year. And I get some big ones during that time. But that's the other thing. I catch so few animals are in that prime area.
Right.
Because I'm going all the time.
Right, right.
And that brings me to the, you know, talk about the coons, man. You're feeding thousands of dollars, and we don't feed the, you know, high protein. We just corn, we throw some corn in the during the year. We mainly hunt food plots and just normal funnel areas, but when I'm taking kids or I take a lot of veterans, Fort Hood is close there, so I take veterans hunting because we got to shoot these does, right, and cull bucks too. So I take a lot of those people. They want to sit at a deer feeder and shoot the deer that walks up, and that's just how people think deer hunting is. Well, for the family and for us, it's not so much. We like to rattle. We like to hunt on the edges of fields and catch them coming and going. It's a lot more fun that way.
Right.
But the coons will eat you out of house and home. I have a friend of mine who he had these creek feeders, these long feeders that, you know, funnels down and just has the protein comes out the bottom, and they're made for sheep and goats. But he filled a bunch of them with high protein and put a fence around it and called it, you know, to his deer feeders. And he thought, man, these deer, they're just coming in eating me. They're going to be huge this year because they're eating thousands of pounds of protein.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he went to go fill that thing up one day, and he popped the top of it, and there's 20 coons in there all fat and happy just laying there, and they all piled out, and they were humongous. Well, he figured out he was feeding trophy coons. He wasn't feeding trophy deer. And so those guys, they want the coons gone, and it's starting in August, you know, our place will start putting coon, you know, the DPs have changed the world of coon trapping, but I put DPs everywhere, and I start knocking them out, and then these other guys start feeding protein in the spring hard, and they want them gone too. And so there's this two, basically you got your fall run and your spring run of coon eradication, and there's nothing to this. The coons are like a tide of coons. They come by the hundreds. You know, if I could get some money for them, I don't know, I'd have to hire five guys to skin them, you know, because we get them by the bazillions. I don't even count them.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, see, to me, that's guys that want to go to Texas, everybody's thinking bobcats.
Yeah.
Or they want to catch a bunch of coyotes for numbers. And I've told several guys, the way in is raccoons. Because if you go, you talk to a guy, like some of the ranches we're on, they got 300 high protein feeders, they got 200 quail feeders. And you go, okay, what's the average coon you see on your trail cams on a feeder per night? And they'll go, 14. I'm like, okay, so let's say they eat a pound a night.
Yeah.
Times 300, times 14, times 365. And what are you paying for high protein? And they'll tell you, and they start getting nervous by this point. And you go, well, you know, my $6,000 fee is basically me asking you for $6,000 because I'm about to give you $70.
Yeah.
And I mean, their eyes get really big when they realize that, you know. But you can talk to a rancher with money more than you can a lot of times, what I've learned, then you're losing deer because it's abstract.
Yeah, it's not actual money. Well, we have a thriving pecan industry there too, and they understand the economics of killing a coon. You know, they'll always say, if you'll come shoot the coons, I'll buy your 22 shells and your gas, and, you know. They wink at you because they know they're saving thousands. And,
right.
You know, they think it's funny.
But to a high school kid, that's heaven.
No, but that's heaven. I mean, that's what we live for there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, the internet maybe has changed some of that, but, you know, my kids, they're still little, but the kids that are the country kids, they're never bored.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're hunting and fishing all the time, and you go shoot squirrels and coons for the pecan ranchers, and it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so the coons, they're an issue, man. There's lots of them, and they wreck the nests of the, you know, the turkeys and the quail too. They're bad about that, and so that's why when I came by your booth, I was like, you know, coon collector coming in a squirt bottle is great, and I like it, and I started to use it, and I use a ton of it, and so that's why I asked you, could I buy a 5-gallon bucket of it if I call you?
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, it's nothing for me to go through two or three bags of fish food in a year, you know, and make it, mix it up, put it in the traps, and I'm not filling them all the way, man. I'm just getting them over the trigger.
Right.
But it's never ending. You know?
So when you trap for other ranchers, is it for a fee or is it for just being a good neighbor?
Yeah, for me, mainly I trap our place, and that keeps me plenty busy. But other people call me. I've done several jobs. And I, you know, I have my places I can get. So there's county roads everywhere that go here and there, and dirt roads. And so Some ranchers just say, well, trap, you know, along the county road, but on my place, you know, if you drive by, puts, and every time I see a hole that looks good, I'm putting a snare in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the ranchers that, you know, there's people from out of town don't understand,
right,
but everybody else does. And so they'll call me and say, you got one in the snare, and I go get it, you know.
Well, I remember when I first started going to Texas, and you'd drive from one ranch to the next because everything's far apart.
Yeah.
And you'd be on these back roads, and there would be coyotes and coons and bobcats strung up in fences to where they just leave them.
Yeah. Well, the old wives' tale on that is, when I first started, I hung them up too because it was kind of like keeping score. And how you get from a place to place, you used to be in Mills County, where you take a left at the three coyotes hanging on the fence, you take a right at the four coyotes hanging in the fence. And those ranchers, number one, it was kind of a pride thing, you know, oh, look what I got. Mm-hmm. Number two, they really thought that when you hung a coyote up, it kept the other coyotes away.
Right.
And well, that just doesn't.
No.
That just doesn't work. It just brings more buzzards. So we don't do that much anymore. And plus, there's people from out of town, they don't understand. And
I can imagine tourists getting pretty upset.
Yeah, it scares them. You know, they bring their wives hunting now. They don't want to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it, you know. I get it.
So when you got done with all your schooling and you came back, was it just watch some stuff on YouTube and you just went to work, or?
Yeah, like, it's so as far as the trapping goes,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when the minute we've got the main ranch manager, and then I'm just a lackey. I just do what he says. And so, because I have a limited amount of time to time, you know, I'm just kind of here and there. So he said, hey, we're losing lambs like crazy. You got to get out here and do this. So I bought the snares, and I punched up snaring on YouTube and saw a few other people. And I'm like, okay, I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd already seen how the government got a snare. And so that's how I started. I mean, I could copy what they did with the little clip. You know, you make a pinch clip when you tie it to the bottom of the fence. And I did that, and I didn't catch much. And so I went and I started looking. Well, it's got to be some, you know, better way
to
do
this. Have
the
government guys started following you since you kind of got modern?
Well, so if they're trapping a fence line, they have priority versus me. So they'll take my snares out and put their snares in and hang mine up on the fence post. But my snares, they're loaded and they're hair trigger. The snares they use, and they're mandated, they got to do it. So the snares they use, that coyote's got to go all the way through there and pull it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not, it's just in a, you know, teardrop shape, but sideways.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've got to pull that slide all the way, go past the clip, and then finally get to the coyote. Well, mine, you know, I do it lots of different ways, but for mine, they're on a hair trigger. Now I have to set them up a lot more.
Right.
Government guy wants to go through there, put his snare out, and come by next month,
mm-hmm.
and pick the skeleton up. They don't check. I mean, they have no check laws for those guys, no nothing. They just, they're there. And they pick the skeleton up, pull it out of there, and put another snare in the hole. For me, you know, I want to get them out of there, catch the next one. You know, I'm checking them all the time. So my snares, I catch
with loaded
snares. Every jackrabbit, every cottontail, mice. I mean, these things are got to be hair trigger because I'm trying to catch those paranoid ones, the ones that have already seen the snares, and they come through there. And about a good percentage, 25% of my coyotes, I catch on the front foot,
mm-hmm.
because they're pawing that snare out of the way, and my snare will fall on them. The government snare won't. They just pull that snare out of the way and go on through.
What I've seen from the guys that snare, like the government guys do there with the pins, the coyotes have learned if they paw at it, but not hard, they can run that up to that clip,
yeah,
then they can just go around the side.
Yeah, I see a lot of those snares run up to the clip.
Mm-hmm.
And so my clips, I do set some like that if I have a big enough hole. But most of the time, I don't have a big enough hole, so my snares are a circle, and they're set half down in the hole, you know, to the bottom of the hole, which may only be 3 or 4 inches, set down the bottom of the hole, but up high, you know, 3 or 4 inches up too, so it makes an 8-inch snare, but only half of that snare is in the bottom, underneath the net wire. So when they touch mine, it falls down on them. Well, they wouldn't even put a snare there because it would be this long this long snare in this long oblong pattern to go under that couldn't do it. So I see their snares up to the clip. My clips, if I do it that way, are either out of florist wire, little bitty thin florist, green florist wire, or I tie flies and a fly tire. So I use the lead wire that I use to wrap hooks with, and I'll just wrap it around there once so that as soon as something touches it, it falls off the fence and that slide will come over. So it's real hair triggery, and but there's maintenance involved.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got, I have about a 35-mile trap line with all the cross fences that I run. These government guys, hundreds and hundreds of miles.
Right.
And so they can't check them but once every one. Most of the time, the rancher will be going by and call a guy and say, you got one in the fence. You know, come cut it out, put another snare. And it's been dead for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Are your government guys, they using M44s too, or just the snares?
You know, I haven't specifically talked to them about that. I talked to them mainly about snaring, which is mostly what they use. They may, but they don't advertise it.
Right.
You know,
well, that makes sense.
And some local guys do. Some
oh,
local
I've
trappers
been around
do.
That. Yeah, yeah, that made me nervous.
Yeah, I don't do all that. I mean, I've got a wife and kids, and life's too short. You know, for that, I'd much rather catch one in a foot trap. I think it's exciting to come up and see. You know, or to see my trap gone and it's on a drag and go find it in the brush. I mean,
well, I was on one place one time and I was horrified because when I took instruction from Craig, he went over M44s in detail. Because when I was younger, I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
and I was wanting to do it. And you know, there's procedures, like you always wear long sleeve, you wear gloves. When you're setting it, you turn your hand backwards so it can't blow towards your face. You never have your mouth open. Because it reacts with moisture.
Yeah.
And I remember I got this place and they had some ranch hands that I think was just across the border maybe 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And they're in t-shirts and they're pouring sweat and they give them like a 3-minute class. And I don't think they even understood all the English. And they roll out there to start putting it cyanide that reacts to moisture.
Yeah.
With not knowing, I'm like going, oh my goodness, this is going to be on the news by 6 o'clock.
Not OSHA approved. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. But Texas is one of the, you know, it's still the Wild West for trapping. It's the best state. I've probably got the hardest county in the best state to trap in.
You ought to go down to South Texas just
I've
for a fun.
I've been thinking
one.
A lot about, and in fact, one of the very first demonstrations was about taking your wife with you on the trap line and you know, and so I texted my wife. I said, babe, we're going on trapping vacations from now on, and I'm just going to check on when the skunk seasons are in all the states, and we're going hopping.
Mm-hmm.
She thought that was pretty funny. So
I bet she really didn't.
No, she knew I was joking. But I do want to go to New Mexico. I do want to go to South Texas. I want to trap some big places and do it where they act like they're supposed to act.
Right.
You know, not like I've been out of the county to other, you know, just the surrounding counties that are more, well, like Comanche County is just north of us. It's a lot more peanuts, a lot less animals. You know, they have more sandy dirt and they plant a lot of crops. It works just like the videos.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, did some work for a couple guys there and just for kicks and giggles. I mean, it's something I believe in. It's my recreation.
Right.
I don't have to make a bunch of money doing it. If they cover some gas, and you know, they just give me a couple $100 for gas doing it, you know, I'll do it for them. I haven't really gotten, and we've got a couple guys that I would be competing with, the good friends of mine that do it for real money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sort of doing it as a extremely addicted amateur. You know, and really
I personally think that's cool because it changes when it has to be your income.
Yeah, it's a job, you know.
And it's stressful.
Yeah, cool. I want to produce. Even when I'm doing it for a favor.
Hopefully they're not too long-winded.
Yeah.
Someone was pretty capable of the line yesterday, but they did.
This is real life.
This is, you can tell it's not edited now.
So when you're seeing, because I got to be up there in about 30 minutes.
Yeah.
When you are running footholds,
yeah.
What do you see different than you see in the videos because they are so pressured?
I don't use dirt holes. I mean if I want to catch
you
coons,
ain't got no dirt, man. How are you gonna put a dirt hole?
I mean, it's tough. You gotta pound it in there. So I use T-bone sets. I pound the T-bones almost all the way in the ground, and I put a little. Our coyotes aren't hungry. There are plenty of food for them, and they got bazillions of sheep and goats.
Which is weird because people see that from the road and they're like, I bet everything's starving to death here.
Yeah, I mean, there's mice. You can't imagine how many mice live in our county. So I'm pounding T-bones in deep. If I put bait in the T-bone, I put it in the hole and I pound it into the ground so they got to dig at it a little bit. And then I put a little lure on top and maybe a squirt of urine around. A lot of flat sets. Under rocks, squirt a little lure on top of the rock, a little bait under the flat rock, and then I might put one or two traps around. And I like triangle rock. If I can find a big flat triangle, then I'll put the bait in the middle and I'll put three traps on it on drags. And if I've got a good location, I might catch two coons and a coyote. Keeping the coons out of them is the hard part.
Right.
And so that's why I trap coons real hard August, September, October, and then I really start foot trapping for the coyotes once the dispersal starts happening.
So you're pretty much no visible. No,
not you, much.
Are you concerned or not concerned about catching cats?
No, I'd love to catch cats. I catch them a lot of incidental catches, and then for our cats, you got to get in the brush.
Okay.
And so, I'll go in there, follow creeks and go through there and try to catch cats. So that's the fun. That's fun because you can make it crazy looking.
Right.
And do some stuff like that. And I catch quite a few cats, and it's fun.
Because a lot of people struggle that, especially in the East, because everybody starts with dirt holes.
Yeah.
They get big dirt holes, and they want to have two dirt holes, and they're going to have three dirt holes with mouse holes going in between them.
Yeah.
And then they go, okay, I'm going to do flat sets, but they can't see it.
Yeah.
And you can watch the blood pressure go up as they walk away from the sedge. You're like, nothing's ever going to find that.
Yeah. Well, then, my point has always been on the dirt holes and stuff. Our coyotes run from a dirt hole.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've seen it. They know it. There's no way.
That's the first thing everybody finds.
That's
on
the
you.
First thing. And then it'll have some, stock out of the box Duke trap, which is what, and they're nothing against Dukes. I have Dukes, some, but you got to modify them to make them run for a coyote.
Right.
These guys, they'll just flip that shiny trap on top of the ground and dig a dirt hole and say, that's good. Well, we all know that's not going to work. And so they put two and two together real quick. So
I had a ranch go, we got some traps over in this old building if you want them. And I'm like, sure, I'll look at them. And there was a box there. And it was from 1987, so it was right after the boom or right before the crash. And they were old number three Victors that had not been touched since then, because one of the boxes was half open, and that box was just full of rat droppings and stuff like that. But how they were anchoring that off is they would take, it looked like stock out of your closet clothes hangers, and they would twist it around the chain, and then they would twist that and then run another one in. So they made like a coat hanger chain that I'm assuming they were tying off to brush or whatever.
Fence post or something.
And you could tell that no one ever thought about touching that as far as any modification at all. And that's what they were running with.
Yeah. I mean, if you got an inch of pan drop, our coats, they're not gonna touch anything like that. It's got to be hair trigger. Well, I say hair trigger. You want it to not move much. You can have a lot of tension on there.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trapping for everything. So 2-3 pounds of tension for me is okay, because I don't mind catching possums and skunks and
y'all
coons.
Have possums?
Oh
there?
Gosh, yes.
Really?
Oh yeah. Where we are, we have, and I catch porcupines.
Once
I
get, you need to go to South Texas. You catch one a year.
Oh gosh. No, I catch 30 or 40 of them just incidentally, you know. But they're just as bad on the nest as anything else. So right. I get them out of there, and they keep coming back, man. I keep saying that eventually I'm going to clean the coons out from walking distance of our ranch, but it hadn't happened yet. You know?
So one of your main lessons is, if somebody, because I always tell people, everybody's got relatives somewhere.
Yeah.
So someone wants to make a big catch, they need to stay out of
Mills County, Texas. Yeah. It's just different. You know, it's more of a, so other guys, they're playing tic-tac-toe. They're just taking the cream of the crop fur trapping. And a lot of this is fur trapping based. And I love fur trappers because they make the innovations that we
right.
use. But those guys long lining, and they're just sweeping up the cream of the crop, the puffs and everything, and moving on. That's totally different than the three-dimensional chess game that we're playing.
Absolutely.
With some coyotes that really know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, to the point where I'll make a set and I may not bait it for a week. I'll make the set, flats out, bed my trap and everything, and I'll come back a week later and I'll put a dab of call lure on there or something, and then go.
Mm-hmm.
That's
pretty smart if people got the time.
Yeah, that's what we're doing all the time, so it's okay.
Well, dude, I appreciate this. It's been interesting.
Yeah, it's different. It's a different game. I don't hear a lot about this kind of stuff. You know, from most of the time, it's your lowest ranch hand that gets the job of running the snares.
Right.
You know,
that's what I've always seen. It's almost like punishment.
Yeah, it's like, okay, you're not a very good worker, so you're running the snares. But to me, it's like the most fun. I'm like, oh yeah, don't throw me in the briar patch, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's it's the most fun of any job at the ranch.
Right.
You know, banging T-posts in the ground in Caliche, that's the punishment job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not the trapping, that's the fun stuff.
Right, right. Well, dude, I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I guess we better go. I got to go get behind my booth.
Yeah.
Act like I'm doing something. All right, appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you.